unlowered his arm. The green torch shifted back into a sword. The smile on his lips turned into a sneer. "Keep pushing me, and the fact that your brother requested you not to be hurt will soon mean nothing," Yon growled. "It would be easier to keep you alive and your brother in check, but if I have to kill you, I will. I've already taken your arm. I can take your head next." With AJ's free hand, he unbuckled the K-bar he held on his vest. He gripped the weapon, blade down. Next, he used that arm to support the barrel of his M16A4. "I can see your stupid mouth movement, but all I hear is trash coming out of it," AJ said with a grin. "Why don't you do something about it?" Eon was as fast as AJ remembered. He had only seen the Emperor in action once, and even in that moment, it was short-lived. The Emperor had taken AJ by surprise in his chamber, using his own nanite arm to cut AJ's from his body. This time around, AJ was ready. He knew exactly what his opponent could do. He anticipated the speed, and it still almost wasn't enough. Eon wasn't a particularly muscular opponent, but he could move. Boom, 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 boom! AJ let loose with a barrage of fire as Eon closed the gap. The Emperor of Sarka moved in sharp angles, avoiding some of the fire. He transitioned his nanite arm from a blade to a shield, blocking the rounds he could not avoid. When AJ's rounds made contact with the nanite shield, they made sharp pinging sounds. AJ walked backward, creating as much distance between himself and Emperor Eon as he could. He gritted his teeth as round after round exited his weapon. Eon was a blur of motion. The blood-red cape behind him flapped violently in the hot Sarkan air. AJ didn't track where he was at the moment, but instead, where he would be. Eon moved in a sharp zigzagging pattern toward him. AJ couldn't walk backward fast enough. Eon was on top of him in a matter of seconds, but not before a single round found its mark. The shield Eon constructed to protect him covered most of his upper body and head. It did a poor job of protecting his feet and shins. Right as Eon collided with AJ, the Marine pointed his weapon at his attacker's feet and let loose with another round of fire. "Ooh!" Eon grunted right before he slammed it to AJ. AJ absorbed the blow from the taller but less muscular man. He shoved his K-bar into Eon's chest. It was deflected by the armor. Eon transitioned his arm from a shield back to a sword. AJ did the same. Swords weren't weapons he was familiar with. Hand-to-hand combat and knives were what he was used to. Instead of creating a long sword like Eon, he kept his short, just larger than the K-bar he held in his opposite hand. The two combatants traded blows. Eon, slowed by the wound in his leg, was still faster than AJ, but the Marine made sure he didn't make the same mistake twice. Instead of playing Eon's game, he continued to give ground, always tracking Eon's sword arm. Eon landed a strike to AJ's nose and temple that drew blood. AJ was more than happy to take those shots while keeping Eon's sword arm at bay. Frustration was beginning to show on the Emperor's face. Clearly, the man had not expected the fight to go on for this long. Neither had he expected to get wounded in the process. A thick line of blood ran from the injury on his left shin to the ground underneath him. The battlement ground was already becoming sticky and slippery with the royal blood of the Sarkan Emperor. AJ ducked under a particularly high attack, then rammed his K-bar into the throat of Eon. Eon's armor turned the blow, but not before AJ's blade took a nice chunk of the Emperor's neck with it. AJ wheeled around for a killing blow. Eon's own sword came down to slam into his chest. The body armor he wore saved him from being completely skewered. However, the blade sank a few inches into his chest. "Roar!" AJ raged in pain. Eon lifted his free hand to stem the flow of blood from the wound on his own neck. A smile of satisfaction touched his face for the briefest moment, right before AJ stabbed his nanite blade into the abdomen of the Sarkan Emperor. Victory turned to pain in Eon's eyes. AJ fought past the searing hot agony he felt from the blade in his chest. Instead of focusing on the pain, he slammed his K-bar into the side of the Sarkan Emperor's neck again. The two men staggered toward the edge of the battlements. Eon tried to say something, but only blood escaped his lips. Breathing was a new definition in pain, with every inhale and exhale. but AJ still managed to find the words. "You owe me an arm," AJ said, fighting past the throbbing in his chest. He pulled his own nanite arm out of Eon's abdomen, forming a longer blade, and slammed the weapon up under the armpit of Eon's non-nanite arm. The limb came off as Eon stumbled back. He lost his balance and tumbled off the battlements. Chapter 16. AJ. AJ spent the next few days trying to remember his dream from the first night aboard the USS Relentless to no avail. No matter how hard he tried to bring the cloudy memories forward, he couldn't. The time on the ship passed too slowly. AJ and the rest of his unit wanted to have their boots on the ground in Sarka as soon as possible. When AJ finally got the word from Ellie that they were approaching Sarka's orbit, he practically ran to the bridge. The ship's bridge was a wide circular room with a massive viewing screen in front of him and various commanding chairs set in strategic order. Ellie Wong sat on the captain's chair in the middle. Her pilots sat in front of her. To her right and left, and also behind her, other officers scanned over data and readouts on holographic displays. AJ visited the bridge once before, on the second day, when Ellie gave them a more in-depth tour of the craft. Still, it took his breath away. His entire reality was still new to him in ways he couldn't explain. Scenes of warships traveling through space was something he only thought possible in science fiction movies or books. Ellie rotated in her high-backed command chair. She rose to her feet and joined them at the entrance to the bridge. "Still takes your breath away, huh?" Ellie asked. "It does to me, too." AJ could feel the silly grin on his lips, but he didn't mind. The viewing screen in front of him showed a tunnel of multicolored light they traveled through. It was the same kind of changing light he had seen in both the gateways the sphere projected, as well as the gateway his brother created. "We're going to touch down on Sarka within the hour. I wanted to go over the plan with you one more time," Ellie explained. "Of course," AJ agreed. Ellie motioned him over to a circular table in the back corner of the bridge. She pressed a series of controls on a bright green holographic readout. A moment later, a 3D image of the Sarkan terrain appeared. A rough mountain range gave way to what looked like vast lakes of water. The way they moved and bubbled, AJ knew they weren't typical lakes, but rather lakes of fire. Past the lakes, a walled city sprinkled with numerous smaller buildings encircled the Sarkan Palace. Towering walls looked over the city and the lakes beyond. "We're going to touch down 5 clicks outside of the city in these mountains." Ellie pointed to the rugged mountaintops with her outstretched finger. "After that, I'll take the Relentless into orbit. We'll stay close and cloaked if you need anything. Long-range support and even a squadron of fighter crafts will be at your disposal if you need us. Keep in mind that should be a last option. Once we fire or let a squadron loose from the hangar, the Sarkans will be able to pinpoint our location." "Don't worry. We won't be calling," AJ said with a hard stare, studying the topography of the alien planet. "I didn't mean we wouldn't help you," Ellie said, misreading the intensity on AJ's face. "Oh, I know." AJ unfurrowed his brow. "That look wasn't for you. I'm already going through the plan for the 100th time through my head. We touch down, locate Remy in the serum, get Remy to open up a gateway back home and deliver the serum. Once our Marines have the serum and can breathe on Sarka, Remy opens up another gateway, and we take it to him." "Yes, in the meantime, the mechanized warriors will act as the backbone of our incursion army," Ellie added. "Don't forget they still have 3/4 of their own forces waiting to be deployed on Dextrax. We'll have more boots on the ground than we need." "I hope so," AJ said, studying the rolling fire lakes. Something about them gave him pause. Some distant memory or dream.
"Jael has already warned us about the creatures in the lava," Ellie said, following AJ's gaze. "Alpha Prime and Omega One assure us their battle tanks will be enough to deal with that threat."
"Right," AJ said, scratching the back of his head. "You've been doing this long enough to know nothing ever goes as planned."
"No argument there," Ellie said with an approving nod. "That's why we have the best of the best with us, to read the situation, adjust, and execute. You're going to get this done, Captain Cole. General Breaker put you in charge for a reason." "He's never wrong." AJ allowed his guard to drop for a moment. I know I'll figure out a way to win, but at what cost? I want to achieve our goal with minimal life lost. That means our Marines and the mechanized units both.
They know what they're getting into, Ellie said. We all do. We're here because we want to be. Don't carry the weight of the world on your shoulder, AJ. It'll crush you.
Right. You're right, AJ said. The moment was over. He needed to be back in the warrior mindset to make the best decisions available for all involved.
I'll tell the others to meet you in the cargo bay. Ellie's dark eyes twinkled. We have a little surprise for you from Marine Space Corps One.
AJ gave her a quizzical look, then opened his mouth to ask what it was.
Go, just go.
Ellie playfully waved him out of the bridge.
You'll see when you get there.
AJ gave her a sideways grin, then left the bridge. He made his way down the wide hall to a glass elevator on the left that would take him to the cargo floor below. This is it, AJ told himself. This can all finally come to an end. Land on Sarka and put this behind you. A sneaking suspicion told AJ, even with this conflict over, nothing would ever be the same in his life again. Still, he focused on getting through the next day and then taking it day by day from there. The elevator touched down a moment later at the cargo bay level. The doors opened for him, allowing him to step into the gigantic cargo hold. To his right, rows of Imperial Coalition and Praetory mechs lined the floor, all standing at attention. Also to his right, a row of small crafts stood ready for departure. The crafts were mechanized, built with enough room to carry six of the mechs in a small cargo space. AJ was surprised to see a large wooden crate in front of him, with a stamp-like label that read Marine Space Corps 2 in big block letters. AJ went to the box, opened the top of the massive crate. Inside were a series of suits and weaponry the likes of which he had never seen. The body armor was lightweight and made to cover the entire body, with a helmet showcasing a see-through visor. The flat black material had a white emblem splayed on the left shoulder. The symbol was of an ancient Spartan helmet and wings to either side.
Christmas come early? Jones asked from behind AJ.
Ellis said she had something for us down here.
Rambo added a low whistle to the end of her words.
Very nice.
We're going to descend to Sarka within the hour, AJ told him, as he removed the pieces of futuristic body armor.
Time to gear up. Well, would you look at this? Jones asked,
reaching into the box. He pulled out a rifle whose scope was nearly as long as the barrel itself. He handed it to Rambo.
I'm guessing this one's for you.
Rambo accepted the weapon with eager eyes. Jones and Rambo kept pulling crate after crate out of the wooden box. They soon found out there were two extra suits inside. They were meant for Jael and Sister Magdalene. There were enough weapons to equip everyone. AJ pulled out a letter at the bottom, along with a manual. The letter read,
Marine Space Corps 2. We're proud to have you as brothers and sisters in this fight. Here's a little gift from us in Marine Space Corps 1. The armor is the same as we wear, and has served us well. Trust your gut. Protect the man on your right better than you protect yourself, and we'll all get out of this together.
Hoorah!
Frank Wolf. AJ felt a smile creep over his face. He folded the letter and handed it to Jones, then hefted the manual, going over exactly what everyone was, including the specs on the armor and weaponry.
Give it here, Rambo said, teasing AJ.
We both know you're not going to read that.
AJ grinned and handed it over to the sniper. While AJ and Jones donned their armor, Sister Magdalene and Jael joined them in the cargo bay. AJ still had his reservations about Jael's true intent, but the fact was, she had done nothing but help them. Right now, he wasn't going to refuse her armor or a weapon going into a war zone. While Jael and Sister Magdalene admired the armor, AJ realized the emblem on their left shoulder was different from his.
What is that?
AJ asked, looking at the emblem sideways. Rifles and an animal skull?
It's the emblem of our military, Jael explained.
With her right hand, she traced her fingertips over the picture.
Two Sarkan rifles cross behind the skull of the Dumaga. The Dumaga are the ancient beast animals of our planet.
AJ took a closer look. The skulls were longer than they were wide, with a sharp beak at the bottom.
Whatever these fire creatures were, AJ was not looking forward to meeting them.
Armor is state-of-the-art,
Rambo said, finally placing the manual at her feet as she donned her own gear.
It can withstand a blast around at point-blank range. We'll each have a HUD in our helmets. Your weapons are capable of firing steel bolts of tungsten steel, as are the smaller sidearms. The sniper rifle is Gauss-powered, with enough force to shoot targets over 2 clicks away.
I love science, Jones said, placing his helmet on his head. It smells so new in here. Today is the best day of my life.
AJ cracked a grin. He could understand Jones's need to take all their minds off of what was about to happen. That was how to deal with situations like this. On the brink of a fight where anyone might not make it back, you turn to humor and ignore the dread looking you in the face.
20 minutes until touchdown, Ellie said over their earpieces. Get ready.
Time to lock and load.
AJ checked his own weapon. He'd taken one, despite being able to use his own arm as a weapon. If he was right, they'd need to pull out all the stops for the conflict ahead. The Emperor of Sarka wasn't going down without a fight.
Chapter 17 Remy.
Hushed voices turned into shouting, and he winced. His head was killing him, and his stomach felt like it was about to be ripped out of him at any second. What the heck happened? The more the fuzz cleared around his mind, the more he started to take in the context of the hushed voices.
Emperor, sir, please,
I want answers, and I want them now!
Remy had never heard Eon sound so angry. Not even the day he escaped back to Earth and Eon's plans were thwarted.
If harm comes to that boy because of what you injected into him,
sir, it was not the language serum that did this. I believe his body is having an allergic reaction to the bracelet.
Why did they all insist on calling it a bracelet? What nonsense are you spouting? That cuff is metal. He can't have an allergic reaction to it.
And yet, that is exactly what seems to be happening. You told me earlier he said his stomach was not well? That he's been having some issues since last night?
Yes.
I suspect that is when the reaction began. I will have some blood drawn to verify, but I think right now our best chance to keep him from slipping further is to take the bracelet off and treat him as we would anyone for an allergic reaction.
Eon was silent, and Remy worked to keep himself still and his eyes closed. He couldn't let them know he was awake and aware. This was too important. Even his befuddled mind could recognize that. And if they ran any kind of blood work, they might find traces of the nanites. He wasn't sure how deep the little buggers had burrowed into his systems. It would be very bad if Eon discovered what he could do.
Fine. His health is our first priority. That boy is important to Sarka's future. I won't risk losing him because I think he might run.
He came of his own free will,
Eon barked out a laugh.
There is no such thing as a selfless act, Ilahora. I'm guessing he's my distraction while his brother sneaks in his forces. But there is nothing that happens on this planet I don't know about. The minute the Earth forces set down, we'll be ready. I gave the boy my word I wouldn't invade Earth. But if they attack first, that frees me to retaliate.
You are very wise, Emperor.
Remy's heart just about burst with panic when he heard that. What kind of security did the Emperor have in place if he'd know when AJ and the others arrived?
What's wrong with him? Why are his stats going so high? It's the bracelet, Emperor. The longer it's on him, the worse he'll get. I can treat him all day, but if we don't remove the object causing the reaction, all the medicine in the world will be useless.
Remove it. I'll post guards outside his door and throughout the hospital wing of the castle. If the boy somehow manages to slip the guards at the door, he won't make it past the others. They didn't know about Iron Man 3.0, Remy's secret weapon.
Fingers brushed his arm, and he bit his lip to keep still and his breathing even. They couldn't suspect he was awake. This was the best opportunity he would get to obtain the serum. The hiss of the metal opening, was accompanied by an immediate relief of the burning and twisting in his stomach. He would have groaned out loud with relief if he wasn't terrified they'd know he was awake. Even the nausea started to dissipate after a few more minutes. The doc was right. It had been the cuff. Maybe the metal somehow reacted with the nanites? It was like his kryptonite or something. He'd have to try and snag it for the scientists back home to study. It wouldn't do for him and AJ to get caught taken out by a stupid allergic reaction. You had to understand your weaknesses so you could handle them better when they came knocking. Something Frank Wolf had taught him, and something he was very much taking to heart right now. How long before he wakes up? Ian asked, pulling Remy back to the situation at hand.
I am not sure, Emperor, Hilohora answered. His anatomy is very different from ours and the slaves we have here. I have not had a chance to study humans yet. I must first do a thorough exam of him, study his blood work, and our scans. I am loath to put him through the scans until he awakens, though. If his body reacts badly to this small amount of metal, exposing him to the scanners could do things I can't even guess at. No, we don't want anything else that could potentially harm him. You are right. Call for me the minute he wakes up. I need to check on his dragons. If he went down, chances are they may have as well.
Panic really struck when Ian said that. But this time he was prepared and kept his breathing steady. He reached out for the dragons, and to his relief, they were fine. He warned them to stay hidden until he called for them. He did his best to impress upon them the importance of staying away from the Sarkans. If Ian decided to put them under house arrest, it would make this that much harder. The dragons were already outside, and he didn't have to sneak them out as of this moment. He just had to sneak himself out. The Emperor and the healer spoke quietly for a few more minutes, but they had moved away from him, and he couldn't hear what they were talking about. He opened his eyes a fraction of an inch, barely a slit. It was something he'd seen Paul Atreides do in the sci-fi movie Dune, based on the book, which he'd read after he'd seen the movie. He and AJ had contest after contest to see who could open their eyes the slightest. Irritated his mother, but made his dad laugh when he and AJ argued about who won. Those little games were paying off now. Looking around, he seemed to be in some kind of infirmary. It wasn't the same room he and Ian had entered. This one had lots of beds and machines scattered around the room and connected to the walls. Several were connected to him. Now this posed a problem. If he unhooked them, an alarm would surely sound if they were anything like the ones back home. He'd yanked an IV out once after his appendectomy, and it brought the nurse running faster than a dog after a ham bone. Trickier and trickier. But if he woke up and started saying all this stuff was itching like crazy, he let out a groan and rolled over on his side, heaving. Granted, his stomach was way calmer, but he could act with the best of them. His mom could never tell when he had a stomach flu and when he was trying to get out of going to school. Feet ran across the floor. Prophet? Hilohora was the first to speak. Are you awake? Remy groaned again and clutched his stomach, retching.
Why am I so itchy?
Itchy? Hilohora fussed.
Where are you itching?
Remy started scratching everywhere, not just where the machines were hooked up. He bent over and retched hard, some of the water he'd had this morning coming up. Man, he was good. Not many people could puke on command. AJ would be proud.
Are you still nauseous?
He threw up more hot water. It was gross, but it made a good effect.
I think that's a yes, Ian said dryly. What can we do to help him?
Remy started to really scratch, this time pulling his arms and twisting in the bed so that a few of the wires came loose.
Bathroom, he burst out. I need a bathroom.
Ian lifted him out of the bed, the wires falling away, and all but dragged him to a room off the ward. It was small, literally a toilet and a sink. What it would do, he collapsed in front of it and started to retch more, forcing anything up he could.
What's wrong with me?
Remy gasped out, making his voice hoarser than it was.
Allergic reaction, we think, Ian told him.
To what?
We're not sure yet.
Liar, liar, pants on fire. He just didn't want to tell Remy.
Figure it out, okay? The dragons are sick, and while I can take it, they can't. They're all babies still.
Where are they? Eon asked.
I'll have someone see to them.
Remy shook his head.
I let them out earlier, but I think the fresh air is good for them. My bedroom window is open, so they can get in when they need to.
Eon nodded. If they get too sick, I can have one of the soldiers retrieve them. Remy glanced sharply at him.
I don't know.
We're not going to hurt them, youngling. Something must have shown on Remy's face, because Eon cocked his head. You distrust me on this? His nostrils flared.
I trusted my brother's superiors, and they hurt them after promising me no harm would come to them.
They hurt them? How?
Scalpels and acid.
Eon's face went white.
They dared to harm a creature of lore?
Ones whose history goes back farther than the planets themselves?
Remy's mouth flattened. He hated talking about this.
It was a few researchers who got ahead of themselves. It hasn't happened since. General Breaker dealt with them.
He broke off and retched again.
This sucks so bad.
I am sorry, youngling. We'll get you better.
Eon ruffled his head, much like AJ used to do when he was a little boy.
You're safe here. You and your dragons.
And oddly, Remy got the feeling in that moment. Eon meant what he said. He would keep Remy safe, but that didn't mean he wouldn't use him to hurt others, to enslave thousands, heck, maybe hundreds of thousands. He couldn't let this kind side of Eon sway him. He had to do what he was sent here to do, even if he sorta started to at least not hate the guy.
Thanks, he managed to choke out. Can I stay here until this passes?
Of course. Once you're through, I'll help you back to bed and let you get some rest.
And true to his word, for the next 20 minutes, he stood there and waited patiently for Remy to finish his upchucking. When Remy decided enough was enough, he tried to stand and stumbled. Eon grasped him and helped him back to the bed. When Healer Hora tried to hook the wires back up, he begged her not to, claiming he might need to run for the bathroom again. Eon told her to let him be, just keep a check on him in case he worsened. Remy couldn't help but do a mental high five. His kryptonite seemed to be working in his favor. He let his breathing even out and watched them through his barely opened eyes. He knew they'd not guess he wasn't sleeping, because they stayed where they were and continued to talk about why the metal of the cuff caused this kind of reaction. Healer Hora kept saying the answer would be in the blood work, but that she'd give Remy a little while to recover his strength before she did anything. It wasn't until they left that he did open his eyes. Now all he had to do was wait and plan his move. Patience was key. But patience was never his strong suit.
Chapter 18 Remy.
It was a good 2 hours later before his chance came. He heard Healer Hora tell the guards that she was going to lunch and would be back within the hour. She asked them to let her know if the patient worsened, and she'd be right back. He waited another 5 minutes before he sat up and looked around. The hospital ward had about 10 beds evenly spaced throughout the area. His monitors blinked at him, little negative lines across their screens. More machines stood against the wall, these unrecognizable. No time to study the view anyway. He had stuff to do. Getting up, he slunk to the middle of the room and spotted the bathroom door right away. But it was the smaller one near the back of the room that got his attention. He locked the bathroom door in case someone came inside to check on him. Hopefully, they'd assume he'd passed out in the bathroom. Then he snuck over to the door as quietly as he could, and thanked God and whoever else was listening, it wasn't locked. Inside, he found a small office. Probably Healer Hora's. The curious thing was that each wall held a door. He crept over to the first one and opened it a fraction of a hair. He could see the guards from here. Two very burly Sarkins stood outside chatting quietly. He closed that one and checked the next one. A bathroom not much bigger than the one he'd been in. The third door had him shouting, "Jackpot!" to himself. It led into the lab. Currently, there were no workers around during the lunch hour. Superhero time. Closing his eyes, he did what Unit 2 had taught him. He thought about the suit and how much he really wanted it to come out. Within seconds, he felt his skin start to heat, the nanos surging to the top and spreading out in a layer over his entire body until the helmet materialized and a whole host of readings popped up in his line of sight. "Come to Papa," he whispered, and activated the cloaking software in the suit. He disappeared from sight. He couldn't even see himself. Coolest thing ever. He was about to let himself out of the room when he spotted the cuff lying on the doctor's desk. Well, one of several cuffs. Three more sat on the shelf behind her desk. He looked around and found a canvas bag. He plucked one of the cuffs off the shelf and put it in the bag. Then he let himself into the lab and let out a few words his mother would ground him for a year for. But he had good reason. The canvas bag was floating in mid-air. This wouldn't do. If the room was monitored, a seemingly self-aware canvas bag would be seen committing felony robbery. He needed the bag to put everything in. Okay, it was a bag. Maybe the suit could help. Think of what you want really, really hard. He wanted the bag to be as invisible as him. It took him several tries and more wasted minutes than he cared to count, but the bag disappeared. Nanos 1, bag 0. He started to move deeper into the room, checking the freezers, thankful the language serum worked so well. It didn't take him long before he found the serum he was looking for, the one that would allow the men and women of Earth to breathe Sarkan air. He only hoped it was enough. He cleaned out the three coolers he found and swiped one of those guns they used to deliver the serum. Now to get out of here. He made sure everything looked the same and then eased his way to the main door. Just as he was about to open it, he heard voices and moved back. Two Sarkans came in wearing lab coats, talking about some new breakthrough in the nanotech. He wished he could sneak some of that out too, but this was the mission. This and nothing else. He waited for them to move by, and then slipped out the door right before it closed. Score. The hallway wasn't quiet. More and more people were coming back from lunch. He couldn't have been in there for a whole hour, could he? He hoped not, but he wasn't willing to discount it. He made his way as fast as he could to the main floor. Jael had sketched out a map of the best way out of the castle from the labs. He had it memorized as well as he did any of the maps he created for his MMO online games. It took him 10 minutes to get to the main gates. But he didn't even attempt to go through them. Too many guards. Instead, he skirted around them and found the smaller gate on the north wall, the one that would lead to the most direct path to the mountain range. One guard stood at the gate. This was the tricky part. He could take the guard out, as Jones had suggested, but killing made his stomach lurch. He knew one day he'd have to face the choice of kill or be killed, or let someone die because he wasn't willing to take a life. But today was not that day. He picked up a few rocks and threw them. The guard looked up and frowned. Remy waited for him to turn his head and threw a few more toward the castle.
"Who's there?"
the guard demanded, and walked toward the sound. Remy didn't wait. He ran, brushing by the guard and out the open gate. He looked back to see the guard staring around him, confused. The city lay outside the wall. It was rather large, but he knew where he was going thanks to the map of the surrounding terrain currently on display in his visor. Another thank you to Jael. He kept to the back alleys and stayed on the outskirts. He couldn't risk cutting through the town central. Too many things could go wrong. It took him 30 minutes to reach the small outcropping of trees that were clustered around the small wall surrounding the city. This side wasn't as tall as the others. It was heavily protected, though. Guards were every 15 feet. Quietly, he slipped around them and hauled himself up in the trees. All those years climbing up and down the tree next to his window back home was paying off. He jumped to the other side of the wall, landing as quietly as a cat. He sprinted for the mountain range. It was another 5 minutes before alarms went off and Remy winced. Well, they'd figured out he wasn't in the room. Time to really get a move on. He kept the mental image of the map Jael had drawn for him right at the forefront of his mind as he hurried along a rocky path. Heat from the lava river brushed against his suit, but the metal kept his body cool. It was like taking a walk in the spring early in the morning before the Florida humidity set in. Some days the humidity was so bad, you soaked your shirt just stepping outside. This place was 100 times worse, though. He'd made it halfway to the mountains when he heard the first rumblings. He looked to his left and saw bubbles in the lava, like water bubbles in a lake when something under the surface breathed. Bubbles meant danger, both in video games and in real life. Bubbles meant lava monsters here on Sarka. The Emperor must have set his version of the Bloodhounds loose. Dang it. He picked up speed, but he wasn't fast enough to miss seeing the creature rise from the lava like some demon rising from the pits. He'd created enough horrific monsters in his games to understand this one was worse than anything he could ever imagine. It waddled out of the lava much like an alligator would. But this thing was at least 20 feet long and just as wide. It didn't crawl along, either. It had legs and could stand. He gulped when it rose up and looked around. Its head was curved with a long chin pointing down in a horn-like structure. Red eyes fanned about the environment, and Remy stood still, holding on to the hope the suit would hide him. He wished for it with all his might. The thing stared at where he stood for a good 5 minutes, before it decided to come closer and investigate. "Easy, Remy," he told himself. "Just stay still. Don't let it hear you breathe." Its smell hit him about a good minute before the creature stopped a few feet in front of him. It stank of overcooked meat, like a burger that had been on the grill too long and then left out in the sun all day. The thing took a deep breath, and he held so still, he could be one of those statues in the parks he hated, the ones that looked like real people had been trapped in the stones. He was that still. Doctor Who would be proud. He kept thinking of that episode with the stone angels where you blinked and they moved in. Only his stone angel was the monster in front of him. Maybe the reason he hated the statues in the park was in part because of that episode of Doctor Who. It was moot at the minute, though. The only thing he cared about was the monster in front of him. He got so close, he could feel its breath on him, and he stopped breathing. When it felt like his lungs were going to explode, it finally turned and moved a few inches to the left. He took a shallow breath in. The thing went still and turned back to him. Oh, God, it hurt him. The thing whipped back around, but just as he was about to break and run for it, his blood ran cold. Zeus and his brothers appeared in the sky, screaming and breathing fire. The lava monster tilted his head up, looking at the dragons like they were interesting bugs. Did Eon revoke his protection? Would it hurt his dragons? He saw the action in his head, and he screamed, "No!" But it was too late. Zeus swooped down and let loose a string of fire so impressive it stunned Remy. Only this monster was made of fire, so fire didn't do a bit of good against it. The thing all but laughed at the dragon. One giant hand, or paw, or claw, or whatever it was, swiped up, and Zeus barely dodged it. "Sweet mother..." He shouted for them to get away, but shouting wasn't such a good idea. The lava monster swung one of its massive paws. It clipped him, and he went tumbling backward. The suit shorted due to his lack of concentration. He felt it fizzle and fade before re-emerging, but it was enough to let the creature know where he landed. No, no, no! He was up and running toward the mountains. He just had to get there and signal AJ, who should be there. They were supposed to arrive today and wait until 1800 hours tomorrow for him to show up or they'd move in. Get to the mountains. The ground beneath him shook from the force of the creature chasing him. It was fast for a creature so big, too. The dragon screamed at them both from above, fire breathing down on it.
"Stop it! Fire isn't hurting it! You're only going to make it mad!" he said mentally to his little bruisers.
"Get to the mountains! Find AJ! Tell him I'm coming in hot!"
One more mile. Just one more mile. His legs burned, and his chest felt like all the air had been sucked out of it as he ran. But he pushed himself. All those endurance runs Frank made him suffer were paying off. Only in the end, it wasn't enough. Hades tripped him up. The dragon dived at him the same moment the lava monster closed in and reached for him. The dragon knocked him down and was caught by the lava monster instead. It screeched in pain. Remy saw the lava monster crushing Hades, the dragon unable to free himself. And that same energy from before rose up, the golden light of the sphere, all the lines of equations merging together to form a force in his head. Only this time, he focused it. The suit helped him. It gave him a way to harness it and showed him how to use it. The shock wave that rocked the ground upended everything. Fire and lava rose up from every river for a good 5 clicks out in every direction as he hurtled the force of the sphere directly at the chest of the lava monster. The creature lost its footing and was flung backward. But Remy didn't care. He was running for Hades, who lay unmoving on the ground.
"Please don't let him be seriously hurt. Please."
He picked up the limp body, refusing to believe he wouldn't be okay.
"Come on, Hades, wake up."
He shook the dragon and shook him some more. He stroked his chest where he thought the creature's heart might be, and let his helmet recede so he could breathe air into Hades' maw and nose. He did this repeatedly until he felt the tiniest movement in his hands. The beast sputtered and took a few breaths, his feeble squawk music to Remy's ears, and that was all Remy needed. He took off, running toward the mountain and AJ. If Eon didn't know where he was before, he certainly did now.
Chapter 19. AJ. The USS Relentless touched down behind one of the large mountains outside the capital city of Sarka. AJ oversaw the unloading of his own squad and the mechs personally. Not that he had much work to do. The mechs were eager for a fight, as were his own unit. The mechs already had a plan in place. They were going to establish a forward base equipped with defensive structures and artillery. Alpha Prime and Omega One joined AJ at the foot of the cargo hold ramp.
"Captain," Omega One began,
"Alpha Prime and I have discussed it in great length, and we would like to merge our two factions into one single fighting force. Taking the fight to those who enslaved us means nothing if we fight as two units. We would like to work as one single entity. We are going to call ourselves the Pretori Coalition."
AJ lifted his brow and turned to look at Alpha Prime. The giant robot nodded. "If that's what you've both decided, then I'm happy to refer to you as the Pretori Coalition," AJ said. "We'll set your larger battle tanks in the front. Once the smaller carriers offload the smart steel, we'll load up your jump troopers."
"I'll see the smart steel is used to fashion the weapon," Omega One said, excusing herself.
"I will coordinate the placement of the battle tanks and the jump troopers," Alpha Prime said.
"Well, that's the last of the mechs," Ellie Wong sounded in AJ's ear. "We won't be far if you need us."
"Clearing away now," AJ said, jogging away from the warship. "Thank you for everything."
"That's why we're here," Ellie said. "We've got your back from the sky."
The Relentless fired up its thrusters, blowing dirt and dust in every direction around it. The cloaked warship rose from the ground. It disappeared a few minutes later. AJ looked out over their position. True to their word, the leaders of the newly formed Pretori Coalition were carrying out their tasks quickly and efficiently. Battle tanks, the much larger versions of the mech warriors, stood sentry. Two of them were placed on each side of the tall but narrow mountain in front of them. The jump troopers were the elite fighting force of the mech army. They would ride the few crafts the mech had and drop in behind enemy lines to cause havoc when the fighting started. The rest of the mech units stood in rows ready for deployment. An ebony mech jogged toward AJ.
"Captain," Unit 2571 greeted him. "I know this is anything but protocol. However, I have cleared it with Alpha Prime, and I wish to enter this battle as part of Marine Space Corps 2. I feel a strong bond with you and your unit. Also,
As the emissary between our kinds, I feel a duty to see you and the rest of our unit through this safely. I would like to accompany you.
AJ wasn't sure he had the authority to grant such a request, but on the battlefield as the highest-ranking officer, he gave himself the liberty.
Unit 2571, AJ said, pointing to the emblem on his left shoulder. I'd be honored to have you as part of my team. See if you can get something to emblazon our emblem on your armor.
Unit 2571 couldn't grin. His helmet kept him from having any kind of facial expression. The blue light glowing on his visor did shine brighter. AJ was sure of that.
Yes, yes. Right away, sir, the giant mech saluted. Thank you.
Before AJ could answer, the mech was off like some kind of kid on recess.
What did you just tell him? Rambo walked up to AJ.
Like him, her helmet was clipped to the magnetic siding of her belt. In her flat black body armor, she looked like some kind of deadly beautiful super soldier from the future.
He wanted to fight beside us as part of the team, AJ answered.
I told him yes.
Rambo arched an eyebrow.
Do you have authority to make him a member of the unit?
I'm taking liberties, AJ answered. The hot wind made him bite off the rest of what he was going to say in a dry cough.
Even with the serum allowing us to breathe here, it's still hot as hell.
Rambo lifted her helmet off her belt. She placed the bucket on her head. The T-shaped visor came to life with a dull white glow.
Wow, you really need to try this thing on.
AJ complied, removing his own helmet from the side of his belt. The bucket was a perfect fit. How they had scanned his head without him knowing, he wasn't sure. Then again, this was a top-secret organization traveling to distant planets, so they probably knew a lot they weren't telling him. Inside the helmet, a HUD sprang to life in front of his eyes, readout logs along the top of his visor. The bottom and both sides scrolled with information.
It's really nice air quality in here, too, Jones said over the comms built into their helmets. I wonder how they do that.
The large Marine joined his counterparts wearing his own helmet.
There's readouts for the readouts in here, AJ observed.
He wasn't lying. There were temperature gauges for both the air outside of the suit as well as inside. There was a rolling text screen of what was said over the comms, so in case he missed something, he could just read it. A small map in the lower left of his visor showed the topography of the immediate area. Friendly soldiers were displayed on the map as tiny green dots.
Should have read the manual, AJ thought to himself. Should have read the manual.
I have Alpha Prime, Omega One, and myself linked into the comm channel,
Unit 2571 said over the comm in their helmets.
We're ready on your word.
Before AJ could respond, Sister Magdalene and Jael joined them. They also wore their suits as well as their helmets.
We want to do our part as well, Jael said. Tell us where we can be of the most aid during the conflict.
You know this area better than any of us, AJ answered her. Stay close.
Understood,
Jael answered.
Let's get around this mountain and see what we can see, AJ said, beginning a steady trot to the left side of the mountain in front of them.
Although tall, the mountain wasn't very wide. In the space of less than a click, Marine Space Corps 2 was around the left side of the structure. Their path took them around the lines of ready prittery coalition mechs. The robots were silent and stood still. However, AJ couldn't help but sense they were coiled like a spring ready to explode. The ships carrying the jump troopers remained to the rear of the main force. At the left flank's head, Omega-1 stood in between the two battle tanks. She maneuvered her hands in front of a solid piece of smart steel. A moment later, it bent to her instruction, forming a cannon with a barrel longer than she was tall.
Awesome, Jones breathed. I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of that thing.
AJ didn't say anything, but he agreed. Right now, his main focus was seeing what lay on the other side of this mountain, and at the same time looking for his brother. Unit 2571 joined them at the head of the left flank. On his left shoulder, he too wore the emblem of a Marine Space Corps member. If Mex could walk with pride, he did. AJ pushed away the question of where Unit 2571 found white paint so quickly and focused his attention on the task at hand.
Unit 2571, see if you can open a channel with Remy to figure out where he is, AJ ordered.
Yes, sir,
Unit 2571 said. The group rounded the side of the mountain to see lava lakes extending out in front of them.
Beyond the lakes lay the city and fortress of the Sarkhan Empire. The lakes were a series of flowing lava, separated by seemingly stable paths of ground. The city beyond was walled and fortified with impressive towers.
AJ? Rambo asked. I don't think you're gonna have to figure out where your brother is.
Why's that? AJ looked over at the sniper. She knelt on her knee, scoped to her helmet.
1 o'clock,
she answered. AJ followed her line of sight, squinting through his visor. There was nothing at first, only the sweltering heat coming from the lava lakes. Then he saw it. A figure running, holding something with both hands. 2 dragons flying overhead. Immediately, AJ's concern was not for the person running. He realized that was Remy. But for the creature following behind. A monster, in every sense of the word, traveled behind his brother, reaching for him with strange tentacle-like arms. The worst part, the creature was overtaking Remy, set to pounce on him at any moment. Rambo, AJ shouted. I got him, Rambo said with a slight exhale. Boom! Her weapon discharged. The creature had to be a full kilometer away, and Rambo hit the thing dead center. She placed her shot right over Remy's head. The creature stumbled and bellowed in pain, then gathered itself and charged again. At least it bought Remy a few more meters of distance between himself and the creature. Link connected, Unit 2571 said. Remy, keep running! We got ya! AJ told his brother. Boom! Rambo let loose with another round. Again it hit her target, and again the creature stumbled and charged forward.
Hey, those rounds are getting really close, Remy gasped. Be careful with my dragons!
I got you. You just keep coming, Rambo said, lining up her next shot.
Remy, tell your dragons to clear out. We can cover you, AJ said, biting back the joy at seeing his brother and the fear at having him caught by the lava monster. Remy didn't answer, but the 2 dragons in the air above flew higher.
Omega One,
AJ shouted. Looking back at the mech, what's the status of that cannon of yours?
Created and ready to be deployed,
Omega One answered. Boom! Another shot from Rambo.
Can you hit that thing without hurting my brother?
AJ asked.
Yes,
Omega One answered without hesitation.
Do it, AJ ordered. Remy, throw yourself on the ground when I give the order.
This sounds bad. What are you gonna do?
Remy asked. Just do it, AJ said. He could hear the cannon behind him whining to life. Remy was half a kilometer away now.
Firing in 3, Omega One gave the countdown. 2, 1.
Remy, now!
AJ shouted. Remy threw himself forward, cuddling the 3rd dragon he held in his arms.
Vroom!
A red beam lashed out from the cannon, hitting the monster in the upper left side of its grotesque body. A shower of gore and black liquid erupted into the air. The monster fell groaning in a mixture of pain and anger.
Let's go! AJ shouted to his unit. Clear line of fire so you don't hit Remy, and let's take it to that son of a gun!
Chapter 20 AJ The air erupted in fire. AJ led his unit toward his brother. Remy rolled to the side to further offer them a clear line of fire on the monster. AJ, Rambo, Jones, Jael, Sister Magdalene, and Unit 2571 all formed a firing line. They advanced on their target, ripping into the lava monster with the tungsten steel rods their weapons fired. The creature that would have taken his brother's life withered and wallowed in pain. It finally crawled back into the lava lake. A cheer rose as the enemy escaped in defeat. AJ ran the rest of the way to his brother, who was just getting back on his feet.
You good?
AJ asked. Looking over Remy, as well as the injured dragon he held.
I am,
Remy said, motioning to the dragon he cradled like a baby.
He's not.
Get behind our lines. Open a gateway to Earth and get him some medical attention, AJ ordered his brother. It's good to see you.
You're not gonna ask if I got the serum?
Remy asked, motioning to the satchel on his arm.
Because I did.
I knew you would, AJ said with a grin his brother couldn't see behind his helmet. Go. Hurry. Gateway first to Earth to get your dragon safe, and the serum to General Breaker. Next, get a gateway to Dextrax open, and let the rest of the mechs through.
Yes, sir,
Remy said in a very non-like Remy way. He ran to go, then held up for the briefest moment.
Cool armor, by the way.
Thanks, AJ said. Go. Remy turned to run, exchanging hellos with the rest of the team along the way. AJ felt a weight of relief lift off his shoulders. Whatever happened for the rest of the mission, at least his little brother was now safe and behind their own lines of protection. AJ's moment of relaxation was short-lived.
"They are coming," Jael warned them. "The Dumaga come! We should not waste time here."
AJ turned to see what the Sarkin was talking about. She was right. In front of them, the gates to the Sarkin city were being opened. Companies of soldiers marched out in tight formation, chanting some war cry AJ couldn't understand. If that were the only thing happening, AJ might have been able to swallow it. It wasn't. The bodies of fire and lava that made up the lakes between them and the city began to bubble and roll. Tentacles came from the lakes of fire in all directions.
"I have a bad feeling about this," Jones said, lifting his weapon to his shoulder. "Orders?"
"Alpha Prime, get those jump troopers ready to roll," AJ barked, leading his unit back to the safety of their own lines. "Omega One, bring our forces to the front of the mountain. I want that cannon ready to start firing on whatever monster comes at us next."
"Understood," Alpha Prime said.
"Immediately,"
Omega One answered. The mech warriors sprang into action, coming in neat ranks from the rear of the mountain and forming a solid wall of metal in the front. The battle tanks protected the flanks. "Jones, I know you want to be in this fight as much as the rest of us, but if anything happens to Remy, we won't be able to build those gateways," AJ said to his friend.
"I got it," Jones said without a second thought. He ran after Remy.
AJ caught sight of the cannon Omega One constructed out of smart steel. It was more of a turret than any cannon he had ever seen. It rose 3 meters from the ground on a solid base. Omega One sat behind a control panel of a thick square base and a massive cannon that sprouted from the opposite end. She maneuvered around, swiveling her weapon and pivoting, both up and down, testing the angles.
"You have any more of that smart steel to build cover for a front line?" AJ asked Omega One over a private channel.
"Consider it done," Omega One said, "although this will be the last of our supply. We can deconstruct and reimagine it if need be."
AJ watched in awe as the mech leader touched a few buttons on her VAM braces, then maneuvered her hands in the air. A section of smart steel separated itself from the base of her cannon and slipped like water toward the front line. Without breaking its fluid movement, it slid over to the mechs on the front line. It reared up, and as if by magic, transitioned into solid form again. Just like that, there was a 4-foot wall to provide cover.
"Open a wide channel, Unit 2571, AJ said, shaking his head free of the wonder he just witnessed.
AJ and the rest of his team came to stand in front of the line of mechanized warriors.
"Done," Unit 2571 answered.
AJ took a long look at the impressive mechanized army. They were giants, and there were a lot of them. AJ turned to look at the enemy still filing out of the enemy city. Soldiers in various tanks rolled out like ants coming from an anthill.
"Reinforcements are en route, but right now, it's up to us to hold this position," AJ turned back to his forces. "We will hold, and we will make them suffer. You, more than anyone else, know what it's like to live under the tyranny of a ruler like Eon. He controlled you, and when he couldn't, he manipulated you to kill one another. Today, we tell him that his reign is over. Today, we make him pay!"
The mechs in long lines in front of AJ slammed their right fists over their chests. The sound rang violent and short-lived. It was enough for AJ.
"Dulmaga!"
Omega One shouted over the comms.
"Let them have it!" AJ shouted. "Vroom! Vroom! Vroom!"
The cannon fired with precision and accuracy as the Dulmaga crawled from their lakes of lava. There were dozens of them, all slightly different from the rest. Some came with tentacles, others with claws.
"The main Sarkin army is about to be in range," Unit 2571 said.
"Open fire!"
AJ yelled. What came next was nothing short of pure mayhem. The mechs in the front line went down to a knee to offer the next line of soldiers behind them a free lane of fire. Missiles, laser beams, and good old traditional rounds were fired from the mechs as the Dulmaga crossed the distance between the two factions. The Sarkin army raced forward as well, combining their forces. As one, soldiers, militarized vehicles, and the Dulmaga headed toward their lines. AJ felt as though he were in the middle of a thunderstorm, stuck smack dab in the center of the most violent maelstrom ever witnessed. In a way, he wasn't wrong. AJ took cover behind the wall of smart steel with the rest of his unit. He brought his weapon to his shoulder and fired. The shock absorption of the rifle he used was light years ahead of anything he'd ever fired before. He felt the slightest nudge into his shoulder when he discharged his weapon into the coming enemy horde. Laser beams were traded